This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Rod Bowen. We're going to talk some NASCAR, some NHRA, and get you ready for Kentucky Speedway. But first, let's go back Coke Zero 400. Rod, another exciting race to watch. This one for different reasons. Last week, we had the great finish. And this week, well, it's Daytona. We had the big one. We had a couple of big ones. Take us through the Coke Zero 400 and all that excitement on the track.
Well, the excitement was the key word in this one. This is the one that kicked you on the edge of your seat. And if you say as a NASCAR fan that you weren't on the edge of your seat with this one, then you probably aren't a true NASCAR fan, because this is the one that kind of kept me wondering what kind of other scenario was going to unfold as the night went on with this race. I mean, we had good weather for this. The teams got out there, and, you know, it's one of those things of where you really don't know what's going to happen. I think I alluded to this last week on the podcast. This is one of those races you don't know what's going to happen. It can make your season to win a Daytona going into the second half of the season, or it can break you, and it can hurt you in a lot of ways. Now, let me just go ahead and give you the rundown of the way I looked at it from on Saturday. Probably one of the most exciting Daytona Coke Zero 400 firecracker races that I have watched in quite a while. You had the big wreck. You had several of the big wrecks, but you had one wreck that took out at least 20 or 22 cars out of the field. And then you had a first-time winner on the circuit in Eric Jones. And I was kind of anticipating Eric Jones winning a race before it was over with. This was his sophomore season in the sport. But I really did not know if he was going to make it to the front and be able to pull off the win like he did on Saturday night, because all of these other factors that were in there, and of course, you had Kyle Busch, he got wrecked. You had Chase Elliott, he got caught up in a wreck. You had Jimmy Johnson at one point that was looking to break a winless streak. He got caught up in a wreck. You had all of these different wrecks, and then throw into the mix Ricky Stenhouse, who has immediately now become, to a lot of the fans out there, this 21st century version of Swerving Ernie Irvin. He just started hitting people out on the track. He pushed them, tapped them, just really wouldn't do a lot of things as he was out there. Bleeding Byron also got in a little bit on the action, because Brad Keselowski is the absolute meaty nail that he's going to go out there and he's going to go Carl Edwards on him. And when I say he's going to go Carl Edwards, every time that William Byron tries to block him, he's going to block back on William Byron, and who knows what could happen with William Byron.
Yeah, you know, I was watching this and thinking at some point during the race, you know, kind of jokingly, but, you know, I was wondering if we're going to have a Talladega Nights type ending with guys like running across the finish line, because there were so many big wrecks, so many guys off the track. And, hey, you know, for Ricky Stenhouse, being the heel, you know, I'm a wrestling guy too. Being the heel could be fun. I mean, at least people know your name at that stage. But, yeah, he definitely earned he's been earning the ire of fans, and certainly did so this past weekend.
You put a bitch in my head of somebody like Eric Jones running after he gets stripped down like Will Ferrell did in the movie, and screaming, "Thank you, baby Jesus," out on the track for a minute that you're winning the race. I mean, it was that kind of crazy of a race all together as this all unfolded on Saturday night.
Well, and we've been complaining for weeks about the relative lack of excitement. Well, the last couple of weeks, we can't complain about the lack of excitement. So we'll talk about Kentucky Speedway coming up later in the podcast. But let's do some off-the-track news. Toyota announces for the Xfinity Series something called the Supra. Talk about this news from Toyota back in the garage.
Well, I don't know if you remember the old Supra, the Toyota from Toyota Cars, the Supra car from many years back, but they have now decided, Toyota has, through their research and development wing that they had, that they are going to introduce the Toyota Supra into the 2019 Xfinity Series for next year. It will make its debut at Daytona, and the maiden voyage that will vault this iconic sports car into the spotlight. I used to refer to the Supra, at least back in the 80s and the early 90s, as sort of like a little mid-Ferrari, so to speak, because it didn't have a T-top on it, so to speak. It had the straight top that you could just lift off of this. But this is a completely different car now. It's been redesigned. And, you know, the people at Toyota, they're looking to change things once again. I kind of look for this to be the same way as Chevrolet is what they have done of phasing out the SS model, and then Ford, of course, phasing out the Fusion model that they had out on the track, and they're going to be going to the Mustang next year, sort of like what Chevrolet did with the Camaro. They brought him in this year. And in the sport, in Xfinity, it has been Camaro and Mustang for a long time, plus the Camry in there. So now they're changing things up, and I expect probably to see if they get some good results out of it in the Xfinity Series after about a year or two of testing. This is probably their big plan to get ready to move the Supra over into the NASCAR Monster Cup Series. And, you know, for them to do this, is a kind of a tedious little process that Toyota puts together. They start out with the Camry, then they update the Tundra for the Camry World Truck Series. Then they've got the 7th generation Camry and the 8th generation Camry in right now. So I look for this one as this being the 8th generation Camry. I look for this to be the replacement going into the Monster Cup here in a couple of years.
Yeah, give them a chance to work out all the kinks, everything else, and get ready for the move to the big series. So this more off the track news, and you know, this is the kind of stuff for me. You know, you're watching the races, it's important to know some of the stuff behind the scenes. And let's go to the NHRA. U.S. Army is going to leave Don Schumacher Racing. This is potentially really big news in NHRA. Take us through what's going on there.
Yeah, this was a stunner for me, especially yesterday afternoon when I got the news. It hurt us that the Army was pulling out of the NHRA, and they've been there with Don Schumacher Racing for nearly 20 years. I was kind of taken aback by it. It's sort of along the same line of what happened with Lowe's and Jimmy Johnson this past year, and that is Lowe's pulling out of the sport, not going to sponsor Jimmy Johnson in 2019, and they're going another direction. Now, I don't know where that all bears into the thing of budgets and the federal budget and things like that, but the Army has been one of the longest-running sponsorships, especially in drag racing, more so than it's been in NASCAR. I know that the Army sponsored in NASCAR here several years ago, but then there was a big stink that was raised by some of the congressmen, especially toward the sponsorship, and you saw these big high-profile drivers. For example, Dale Earnhardt Jr., who was carrying the National Guard colors on his car there for a long time. I don't know if Congress has anything to do with this. I don't know what the situation is, but when I was at the drags at Bristol back in June, you thought that this was a match that was made in heaven, and it's been that way, because here came the Army in celebrating their birthday, 240-something birthday coming in at the track. You had Tony Schumacher, you had Antoine Brown, you had Liam Pritchett, you had Don Schumacher there, and they were all celebrating the Army's contribution. They always send a soldier into the drag races each and every week, and he is there, and he is their he's their guy that's clapping right off the edge when they get that car over on the line and get it ready for their drag race. They've been there, they've been a loyal partner with Don Schumacher Racing, and according to them, they say that they are, you know, they're looking at other marketing efforts, redirecting their marketing efforts in 2019, which kind of makes me wonder, are they going to be pulling out because of money woes, so to speak, from the government? Is the government looking at them and doing that? Or is it just something that as time has come that they're wanting to go a different direction with it? It's going to be interesting. I wonder where. I think Schumacher and them will pick somebody up, but this is a big blow to them, especially having them on the car for at least 20 years.
Yeah, all the money that our federal government wastes on $500 hammers and first-class plane tickets for people. This is actually something that has been, I mean, I look at, like you said, about NHRA, about NASCAR, even with football, you know, the pregame ceremonies that have gotten axed recently with, you know, the flag ceremonies and those special ceremonies honoring soldiers. I mean, you know, it's penny wise, pound foolish, perhaps. and certainly a big impact on Schumacher and their operation there. So we'll have to see the fallout as far as that goes going into the future. So let's take it from the garage now to the press box. Steve Wald, a former Virginia sports writer, named the 8th Squire Hall Award recipient. Somebody whose name's familiar in these parts. Talk about this news.
Well, I had a chance of, over the last few years, I've had a chance to see Steve Wade in the press box, or especially at Bristol and some other tracks along the line. He was featured even for a time being on TNN when Ned Jerry and Steve Burns had their old TV show of This Week in NASCAR. He would contribute there. But Steve Wade is a Virginia product. He started out really covering motorsports in the early 70s for the Martinsville Bulletin, and then spent 10 years at the Roanoke Times News before he moved on to Grand National Scene, which was pretty much centered out of Charlotte at that time. And then he moved on into the monthly magazine NASCAR Illustrated. But before that, he was at NASCAR Scene. But he recently retired. I should say he retired back in 2010. But Steve Wade has this, I guess, this image of he's just one of these guys that you go to for one of the people that knows so much about the sport, and he knows he has the inner workings about the sport and the personalities and different things like that. He has worked really well with a lot of these teams. Sometimes he would come across as being a little bit brash. Sometimes he would come across as being, well, some people might say, a know-it-all. But in the long run, he was one of these people that was held in very high esteem, and he got picked out of the nominees. And here's some of the nominees that got also selected, and then he was the finalist out of it. Don Jenkins, who used to lead NASCAR's coverage on ESPN from 1982 through to 2000. Then you have Bob Moore, who spent more than 20 years with NASCAR with the Daytona Beach News Journal and the Charlotte Observer. And last but not least, he'd be out somebody that I really have a lot of respect for. Loved his photography. Absolutely one of the nicest men in the media center you could ever come across. Keith Taylor Warren, if that name sounds familiar, he's the one that was best known for the 3-wide photo and the 1959 Daytona 500 finish. And he covered every Daytona 500 until his death, and met him at Bristol probably about 20 or 25 years ago. Carried about 3 or 4 cameras around his neck at once, and he was always a joy to talk to. He passed away in 2008. Steve Wade beat out some big names in the competition for this honor, and I'm sure the rest of them will get honored at one point or another, but Steve Wade, very deserving of it. He gets into very prestigious company, Chris Economaki, and of course the late Steve Burns, Benny Phillips in there as well. So there's been a lot of people that he's going to be joining that Hall of Fame scene with the media center and the press box, so to speak.
Yeah, I like seeing Virginia newspaper guys getting honored on the national scale, and a guy who started like me at a small paper. Now, if you're going to start at a small paper and you want to write about racing, you can do worse than starting at the Martinsville Bulletin. So good for Steve Wade that he gets the attention and the recognition that he's long deserved. So let's go back to the track now. We talked about the Coke Zero 400 from the past week. Let's get ready for Kentucky. So give us some insight into Kentucky Speedway. What can we look forward to?
Well, Kentucky, if you're not familiar with Kentucky Speedway, it's probably one of the more younger tracks that's on the circuit right now. It's located a little bit out of, in between Cincinnati. It's in Kentucky, of course. I think it's around somewhere outside of past Florence. But one of the things that stood out with me here several years ago about Kentucky Speedway was when they first had their NASCAR race there, they had pandemonium after the race trying to get everybody out of there, which forced the Kentucky legislature to say, maybe we need to do something about the roads in this part of Kentucky. So what did they do? A little bit of help from Ruby Smith and Speedway Motorsports. They got some roads improved, and now they've really made Kentucky Speedway into one of these great stops there, sort of as you start making your way toward the Midwest. Kentucky's a mile-and-a-half track. It's along the lines of the cookie-cutter track, so to speak, where it's a little bit like Charlotte, laid out like Charlotte, but there are some tough conditions there. The way the track has been over the years, you've seen some surprise winners. You've seen some people that you thought would probably have a chance of winning this race. that would suddenly just, you know, lose it before it's all over with. They would lose it in the wall, all because of the way the track is. The track has improved, though, over the years, and this is set for another Saturday night special, so this will be at 7:46 is when the green flag is scheduled to drop, and this one will be televised on NBCSN, whereas the Cokes 400 was on NBC. They'll be moving this one over to NBCSN for the coverage on Saturday night. So another great Saturday race. Where do we see him going into this one like we do with the Coke 0400? It's anybody's guess right now. I think we're getting back to a little bit more of the short track racing, so to speak. This is kind of the mids in between Bristol's and the super speedways. But I think we'll see another shootout, especially under the lights. You know, there may be some tempers still simmering after this past weekend, because I know that Ricky Stenhouse has made amends. He told people he was sorry. I don't know if they will cue him the same way that it was all said in the years back in the 90s, or especially in the late 80s, early 90s, when they brought Ernie Irvin into the driver's meeting and sat down, and he told everybody, "I've not drove with my head on right, and I'm going to try to make a better driver." We'll see what happens with this. There are a lot of people that are upset with this coming out of this race from Daytona that are not happy with Ricky Stenhouse. But you also have to understand, too, Ricky Stenhouse is trying to get a win for this Ralph Fenway team that hadn't won on the Super Speedway since last year. Of course, he won last year with it and then won Talladega. But they haven't really dominated this year. And so they're looking for a win. You still can't really count out some of the others that's in this whole pack as well. And I would say if Eric Jones has got some good momentum, he may be in contention for this one as well. But I'll just tell you, I don't think I'll rule out Kyle Busch, because Kyle Busch was upset. He wasn't happy, and I think he's looking for a mile-and-a-half victory, and this would be the thing that could kind of propel him forward into the second half of the season.
Good stuff, as always, from Rod Mullins. Well, Rod, we'll have you back on next week. We'll break down Kentucky. We'll talk some more news and notes, as usual. Well, thank you, Rod, for your time.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.